everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Here we are. It's December 23rd, 2014. That happy holiday time. It's a cloudy, chilly, wet, lovely time here in New York City. I'm staying in, and I'm glad I have the ability to stay inside. And for those who have to go out in it, I hope you've got the right clothing. That's the secret to living in New York City, having the right clothing for the right time of year. It's long underwear time, in case you didn't know what the secret is. That keeps you from getting warm, from getting chilled. And there's a lot of bugs going around that you don't want to catch, especially when it's cold and wet outside. So I hope you're taking care of yourself. And it's the holiday season, and there's a lot that comes with that. A lot of fun, a lot of joy, a lot of stress, a lot of good foods, a lot of bad foods. And if you're someone eating a healthier diet than most, sometimes you're challenged. Either you're not invited to some of the events because nobody knows what to feed you. there's all kinds of fun things that are going on right now. And if you're challenged at all, please feel free to send me an email at info@realmeals.org. We can at least share what's going on, and who knows, maybe I'll have some helpful tips for you. Let's bring on my guest for today. I'm really looking forward to this. Mark Ripken is a mid-Atlantic area registered dietitian with a master's in health education. His approach combines a plant-based lifestyle with a passion for solid research. His own experience eating a plant-based diet for more than 20 years translates into realistic and attainable meal options. With Mark's approach, you can experience improved food choices, more energy, fewer medical symptoms, and need for fewer medications. The balance of good science with various non-traditional approaches results in Mark's core principles. Make a note of this. Eating whole plant-based foods, emphasizing good flavors, adding salt, sugar, and oils in a smart, measured way, sustaining earth-friendly food habits, using supplements only as needed. And his website is balancednutritiononline.com. Mark, how are you today?
Hi, Karen Hartglass.
Mark Ripken, my old buddy.
Long time no chat.
Gosh, you know, I was reviewing the last time we spoke on this show. It was more than 5 years ago.
Has it been that long?
Yes. And I'm not happy about that. Not happy at all.
You got 5 years younger, Karen.
Oh, thank you. And you?
Well,
you've stayed
I got 5 years grayer, but, you know, it happens.
Well, you don't have to go gray, but we don't need to go into that.
Yes, that's true.
There are lots of options in 2014 for your physical appearance.
Yes.
But the best thing is to keep the inside of your physical body in tip-top shape as best as you can.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk about some of that today.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, so 5 years, what's new?
5 years, what's new? Oh, well, my new website and my new business focused on online services.
Oh, that's good, online services. That means people don't need to be where you are.
Yes, well, very few people are where I am, and I suppose I'd probably want to be in Florida myself, but...
We were just saying that the other day. Let's just go to Florida.
Yes. But being the plant-based community is growing but still small. There is obviously a great need for services that people can access wherever they may live.
Now, you're in Baltimore.
And I'm in Baltimore on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
But there's probably far more plant-based eaters in New York City and Portland and California than where I live, so let's take it worldwide. So I'm offering webinars and meal plans, nutrition handouts, everything to get someone started or maintain a healthy plant-based lifestyle.
And that's what it's all about for so many reasons.
Absolutely, and to do it with good flavor.
And why not? Delicious and nutritious.
Absolutely. I mean, well, I suppose some people like cardboard. But,
right.
I do know a few people who will sacrifice flavor for nutrition. But
it's not necessary.
Yes, exactly. It's
totally
not necessary. And I don't think the average person should be expected to.
We're here to experience joy.
Absolutely.
And
one of the greatest joys in life is food.
Is good food.
Yeah. And
all right.
And,
So five years have gone by, Mark.
Yes.
And you have a lot of knowledge about health and nutrition, and every time I talk to you, I think I know it all, but I always find out something new. And I'm hoping that happens today. And one thing that got my attention, I was reading some of your posts on Facebook, and you were bemoaning some of the folks that promote a low-fat diet. And tell us why you think that's a problem.
There are many reasons.
We've got all day.
Yes, we've got all day. So first of all, the primary core argument of the very low fat, which generally includes a no oil approach, is that oil is cardiovascularly unhealthy. It's risky for your endothelial layers, which is basically the inner layer of your arteries. And the research that highlights this information, which has been, of course, widely promoted in books and videos online, et cetera, uses very large amounts of oil to demonstrate an adverse effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the core takeaway from the research is that we should not be drinking olive oil or any large amounts of fat in any food, whether it's avocado or olive oil or greasy Indian food. And unfortunately, the research has been, I would say, misapplied to demonize all oil, all the time, in any form, any shape, any size, anywhere, as bad for you because large amounts do clearly create a risk. But there's no research on small amounts. And in fact, all the research that I've been able to find on small amounts indicates not only is there no risk, but there's probably benefits.
Mm.
And
now, what do you consider a small amount?
2 to 3 teaspoons.
A day?
Per meal.
Per meal? Wow.
Per meal.
That's pretty good.
So, and some people could probably even tolerate more, depending on age, body size, activity level. And in fact, one of the concerns that I have relates to flavor. A lot of herbs and spices are dissolved in fat.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a nice Thai curry with tofu and all kinds of wonderful veggies, it needs a little bit of fat somewhere for you to taste that curry and, well, to get the maximum flavor enjoyment out of that curry.
Okay,
no
so
fat.
Mark Rifkin says a little bit of oil is okay.
Yes, a little bit of oil is okay and will help you enjoy your food.
Yes.
So, and of course, a lot of nutrients are also fat soluble. So, for example, if you have carrots in that curry, carrots, of course, huge source of beta carotene. Beta carotene is fat soluble. It needs a little bit of fat for your body to absorb it.
Well, we've heard about those studies with fat-free salad dressings where people that ate the salad dressing with fat in it absorbed more of the nutrients for that reason.
Absolutely, and not a little bit more. It was a lot more,
significantly
more. So I'm not suggesting that people should be drowning in their olive oil dressing, regardless of whether or not it's high quality or not, but what I am suggesting is a little bit of oil is probably a good thing.
Now, a lot of people have a hard time understanding what that means because I work really well with all or nothing. And when you open the floodgates and say, okay, you can have a little bit of this, you know, some people might take that to extreme, but it's good to know.
I am sympathetic to that concern, and I do think that there are a lot of people out there who have this all or nothing mindset. And I can sympathize that that's a problem. And I think that's one of the concerns of the authors, that are promoting an oil lifestyle is that it's too difficult, too challenging, too time-consuming for people to measure out what is a little bit. Is this enough? Is this too much? Maybe not. Who knows? Oh, let's just discard the whole problem entirely and make life very simple. And, well, it sounds simple, but it doesn't. Nutrition doesn't get that simple sometimes.
I don't like dumbing down the public.
Yes.
I think we should all get the best information that is currently known, and it should be widely promoted, maybe discussed in different ways by different people. Some have a flair for explaining concepts in simpler layman terms. I personally enjoy doing that, finding ways to explain something difficult and making it more simple when I can talk, at least.
Yes,
when I'm not tripping over my tongue. Okay, so you also, getting into detail on this subject, you have worked with some people that have had a hard time transitioning to a plant-based diet because they jumped in and didn't consume any fat or very little.
Yes, well, I'm going to try to be as general as possible here. Let's say I have a client who is under 40 years old, and she went very quickly to a whole food, plant-based, no oil diet, probably in within, I would guess, less than 30 days. And this person, who is very young, less than 40 years old, developed gallstones.
Oh, wow.
And, we generally think of gallstones as something that's associated with a traditional American high-fat lifestyle, which it generally is. The challenge, though, the body gets used to that lifestyle, and that's apparently the lifestyle that this particular person was on, and that's where I think a lot of whole food plant-based people come from, mm-hmm. is this, high-fat American lifestyle that's, swimming in oil and grease from everywhere. Well, unfortunately, the body, once your body is trained in that way, it basically expects the next meal to be similar as all the previous high-fat meals. And when it's not that way, the gallbladder, which secretes bile, has a problem. It's waiting to eject that bile.
Mm.
And bile, of course, for everybody who doesn't remember their basic anatomy, bile is an emulsifier or a fat, which basically means it separates the fat into small particles. And, of course, a typical American high-fat meal, your gallbladder will be squeezing out quite a bit of bile.
Mm-hmm.
But on a meal with very little or no fat, the gallbladder is just waiting, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
But it was primed for that Big Mac with an order of fries, because that's what it had, and that's what it was used to. But now all of a sudden we're eating a no-fat vegan chili, and the gallbladder has nothing to do. So essentially that bile essentially sits there, and it sits, and it basically becomes very thick. It basically, what we call precipitates out. Stones basically precipitate out as the gallbladder basically becomes stagnant, because it doesn't have a reason to eject that bile.
Mm. And think if people are transitioning like that, that they should consume a lot of fat, a little fat? How much fat?
If people are transitioning, you might say, aside from the end point, which is a no-fat lifestyle, one could, in theory, reach that lifestyle, but I wouldn't recommend people do it within, say, 2 to 3 weeks or 4 weeks. I would recommend people take a little bit longer to allow their body to adjust. So I would probably recommend, especially if they were on an extreme high-fat American lifestyle, the higher the fat content before probably would dictate the length of the transition.
Right. Not going cold turkey.
Yes, a very good term on a plant-based discussion. Yes, try not to go cold turkey. And so if you were eating only, a moderate amount of fat, then your gallbladder might not have too much of a problem. But if you're going from pizza and cheesesteaks and French fries every day and Big Macs, to go in whole food plant-based in a month is probably not a good idea.
Hmm. And not whole food plant-based, really low fat.
Yes. So, and that this person was not the first person I've encountered with this problem. I've actually encountered an older male with the same scenario.
Hmm. You may need to fund some sort of study and look into this. This is fascinating.
Well, there is some research. Sharp, drastic weight loss is already known to produce or put people at risk for gallstones. And that's basically what we're doing here is basically it's a similar kind of process as drastic weight loss when people make this transition in a very short amount of time. So I would caution people, even if one chooses to go no oil, take it slow and give your body time to adjust.
Okay, now the last time we spoke was 5 years ago. I can't believe it. And we covered a number of items, and now I'm wondering, a lot happens in the world of nutrition over time, and 5 years is a long time.
Yep. In the world of nutrition, that's almost that's a lifetime almost.
Right. So can you highlight some of the new things that have come out in the last few years?
Some of the new things that have come out in the last few years.
With regard to nutrition?
Well, I would say definitely one area that seems to be advancing fairly rapidly is probiotics.
Hmm.
And I can't remember who said this, but the digestive system is the inner tube of life.
Okay.
I think there may be a book by that title, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And we have actually more bacteria in and on our bodies than we have actual body cells.
Mm. Bugs
basically,
everywhere.
Basically, we are walking Petri dishes.
Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating, too, is that there are so many different kinds of bacteria, and each one of us can have a very different spectrum of bacteria. Like mine may look very different than yours.
Absolutely. And we're only just beginning to even understand what affects the bacteria, in terms what effects of our lifestyle has on the bacteria, and how the bacteria in turn affects us. And there is very much a domino effect. One of my favorite researchers, Dr. Milton Mills, has done a lot of research on probiotics.
Mm.
And he's uncovered some research that basically people living in a traditional American lifestyle are basically starving their good bacteria of the food they really want.
And I bet I know what he likes to feed his probiotics.
And what do you think that food would be?
Beans.
Yes. Well, do you know the specific component in the beans?
Resistant starch.
I'll give you that one.
Okay, I'm just pulling straws here, but I haven't talked to Dr. Milton Mills in a long time, but I remember hanging out with him from time to time, and he loved his bean dishes, and that was long before I knew that the prebiotics in beans feed the probiotics.
Yes, exactly. So I would put it in terms of a more easy term that people can understand, which is fiber.
Fiber. Okay.
Yeah. So there are, of course, two different kinds of fiber. And we're talking, for the most part, that the form that feeds the bacteria is soluble fiber,
mm-hmm.
which occurs in beans and oats and barley, apples, pears, plums, peaches. And the bacteria love to chew on this stuff. But if we're not getting enough soluble fiber in our diet, well, we're basically forcing the bacteria to live on something else. And they don't want to do that, but they will do that if we force them to.
Mm.
And that's where we generate a lot of potential pathogenic activity, is because we're giving them essentially bad food.
Well, you know, it's like you reap what you sow. Somehow you eat bad food and you feed your bacteria bad food. Poor guys.
Yes. Yes.
So what do they do?
Well, they have all kinds of problems, and probably one of the things that happens is they secrete substances which are not very healthy for our digestive tracts.
Mm.
And that's where it could be some potentially increased risk for colon cancer, because we're feeding our bacteria subpar food, basically.
Yeah, and then it excretes, like, things that are toxic to our colons.
Yeah, so you definitely want to feed your guys. And you want to feed your guys good stuff.
Right.
And
we should start a campaign, be good to your bacteria.
Yes, and be good to yourself. And people don't need to go out and buy Metamucil or Citracell or, you know, take any nasty fiber pills.
Mm.
Just eat some beans.
Yeah, fiber is a funny thing, the way we thought about it over the last few decades. I remember bran muffins were such a popular item in the 80s. We needed our bran muffins to get our fiber. And I love beans. They're cheap. They're so tasty. They're so satisfying. And now we know they're feeding our good bacteria.
Yep. And I would say, as a plant-based eater, the one thing I think we don't need is a bran muffin.
Why not, Mark?
Of a good thing is no longer a good thing.
Yeah, like wheat germ and bran, we don't need those foods, do we?
No. Laxation is, or shall we say, going the old number two, is not a problem for people eating a healthy plant-based diet. And in fact, getting too much fiber could cause some adverse side effects. So that's why one of my key concepts in my nutrition practice is balance, and thus my business name.
Yes, balance
everything,
nutrition.
Everything has a balance, and even beans. 3 cups of black beans at a meal is probably too much.
Oh.
Even though I love black beans, but 3 cups,
that's a lot.
You're going to be somewhere in pain. So it's the same thing for every food. Every food has a balance.
Mm-hmm.
There's a minimum and there's a maximum. And the same thing for fiber. And I don't want to go out and eat a bran muffin.
Okay, you're bringing up a couple of good things that I want to focus on. Not very popular or comfortable subjects. So let's talk first about beans and gas and bloating. And
yes.
There's lots of different recommendations to avoid gas, and I can't say that I've tried all of them, but I've been eating beans, and I love them, and I still have gas.
Yes, and
is that just like my...
Well, it could be your unique constitution.
Yeah.
It could be
or maybe
the
I'm
vodka
eating
martini.
Too much.
Say that again?
Maybe I'm eating too many beans. I love them so much.
Well, that could be. It could be the vodka martini you're having.
Does that create gas?
No, but alcohol is an antibiotic.
Oh.
And those antibiotics kill your good guys.
You know, there was a period in my life when I did enjoy a vodka martini dirty with olives. Loved it. Green olives. Yum. But I haven't had one in a very, very long time. But that's a good point. Alcohol doesn't really help us, does it?
No. In small doses, I'm not worried, but routine consumption is going to potentially alter your gut flora, your bacteria. It's going to alter the way you digest your food, particularly for beans and related foods that may be causing gas in some people.
So maybe don't drink and have beans in the same sitting?
Yeah, try to keep the vodka martinis and the six packs of beer to a reasonable minimum.
Yeah. Well, it's holiday time, so it's the season to drink.
Yeah, I've heard that. In general, if you have a couple indulgences a few times a year, I'm not going to worry too much.
Right.
But
okay, let's get back to the beans and gas. Do you have any recommendations?
Yes.
What are they?
So, first, and this applies especially to people who aren't used to beans in general, is that you don't want to go from a no-bean lifestyle to just jumping in the barrel of black beans and kidney beans and chickpeas, and it's not going to work very well, or at least not without a certain amount of music. So you want to start slow, like everything else, and you want to ease your way into the world of beans. And there are, of course, there's many different kinds of beans. There's at least a dozen different varieties in your market, but there's only two, or perhaps three, that I would focus on. And I'm sure you love at least two of these.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the lentils and the split peas. And then I would also throw in adzuki beans. If anybody's familiar with adzuki beans, they're the red, small red Japanese bean. They cook very quickly, like lentils and split peas. They generally are going to cause less gas in most people.
Yeah, in most people, lentils, I've heard it, that lentils and split peas and adzuki are supposed to give less gas, and yet lentils are like the worst for me.
Really?
And yeah, I mean, it's true. So, if you're out there and you're nodding your head, you're not alone. You've got me. and I haven't, I know there are a bunch of other things to try, which I have to get around to. But I've soaked them and rinsed them every 12 hours for 2 days, as per Brenda Davis's recommendations. Didn't help.
Yep.
And I think it made a little better, but not much. But okay, I don't mind it. It's not terrible. And my understanding is that we pass gas about 25 times a day anyway, that it's natural.
Right. Well, in defense of the people around you, it might be better to... It might be better to try something. So,
yeah. Well, it's not
offensive. I'm definitely a fan of soaking beans overnight. In general, lentils and split peas shouldn't need a whole lot of soaking, shouldn't need really any. But for some people, they may. And, of course, the longer you soak, the more of the gas-causing agent you pull off.
Mm-hmm. I love them because they cook so quickly, and I love the way they taste, so I'm not giving them up.
Yes. And then, of course, a lot of people not only soak for a long time, but it rinse intermittently.
Of course. Essential.
So some people just soak a whole long time and rinse one time.
Mm-hmm.
Some people soak a long time and rinse three or four times.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you can, people can select either one of those to get themselves started. There is, of course, a supplement product that people could buy. It's basically a vegan version of Beano.
Oh.
It's called Beanzyme.
Mm.
And no, I don't have any financial interest in the product. But it digests those carbohydrates that many people find challenging, and that's ultimately what's causing the gas is certain kind of carbohydrate. And so it digests this carbohydrate for you, and in theory, the people around you will be thanking you.
Mm-hmm.
In theory.
Okay.
Now, of course, anything that affects your gut bacteria is going to potentially affect the way you digest your food. So in addition to the alcohol, any recent doses of antibiotics could affect those gut bacteria and the way you digest the food. Steroids, same thing, same problem. So, and of course, just living a typical, unfortunately, high-stress American lifestyle affects those gut bacteria.
Right.
So another possible therapy could be using a probiotic supplement to sort of rebalance your gut and get your bacteria back on a happy keel.
So the question is what kind, because there are so many probiotics, there are so many brands, and yes. there are millions and billions and trillions of them. How do we know which one to pick or that we even need?
Good question.
Yeah.
That's why I love you, Karen. You're so smart. generally speaking, a wide variety of lactobacillus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a what we would call in the science world a genus of which there are many species.
Mm.
So generally speaking, if you can find a good quality product that has several different lactobacillus species.
Mm, not just one, but several.
Not just one, several. That should help you rebalance your gut, help you digest your food better, maybe digest some of these carbohydrates a little better, maybe release a little bit less gas and make the people around you a little bit more happy.
Nobody's unhappy around me.
that's just because it's that magnificent red hair.
Yes.
It just makes people so much happier they just forget about the other stuff.
All right, let's get to another uncomfortable subject.
Yes.
That could be, it's related to fiber, certainly, and that's what we call in on my floor here in my apartment building, downloads.
Yes.
Or bowel movements. And it's something that I think is really important to talk about when we talk about diet and changing diets, because that's like the first thing you notice that changes.
Yes, I would say.
And some people, no matter whether they're eating healthier or not, I suppose it's sort of like the gallstone phenomenon, but you can start eating healthy and become constipated or have the runs. It can go either way.
Yes. Well, I would say that I haven't come across too many people who went into a healthy food transition and became constipated, but anything is possible with a digestive system, you might say.
Mm-hmm. The mysterious digestive system.
So aside from a healthy profile of gut bacteria, generally speaking, I'm looking for a suitable amount of fiber and a suitable amount of water and a reasonably well-managed state of stress.
Oh. Do you have a stress pill you can recommend?
If I had a stress pill...
yeah. Stress.
But anything that helps people relieve stress is going to help improve digestion, in theory. So for some people, a stress response is constipation. For some people, a stress response is diarrhea.
Hmm. Interesting.
Can go either way. I would say probably more people probably tend toward diarrhea.
The runs.
With stress than constipation, but that's, you know, stress is a huge, huge factor for so many problems that we experience in our health and digestion.
Now, people that are transitioning can really get frustrated because they can start eating salads like they never did before, and all of a sudden they're very uncomfortable because their bowel movements are very fluid.
Yes.
So what are they supposed to do?
First thing you want to do probably is make sure that the problem is not something serious, which might mean a visit to your physician or healthcare practitioner, but assuming that there's nothing serious going on, like an inflammatory bowel disease or something like that, bears the thought, but maybe back off the salad a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, maybe there's a transition period here that's involved to take a body that's used to pizza and hot dogs and burgers to salad. And of course, you know, if that salad is extremely large or maybe has a lot of salad dressing on it, or maybe has a lot of cheese or nuts on it, any one of those could contribute to having, you know, shall we say, an excessively fluid movement. We only want fluid movements in yoga and Pilates.
And music. Yes, lovely. Fluid movements can be good. They have
yes.
their place.
Yes.
Yeah. So some people need to go a little more slowly or a little more gently, depending on where they're coming from. Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, again, a little bit of salad dressing is not necessarily a bad thing, but you don't want to be drowning your salad in salad dressing because that does bring a lot of oil. And for some people, oil can be a strong predictor of an extremely fluid movement.
Oh, you mean too much oil?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, there's a limit. So, and of course, salad dressing can really take an otherwise healthy salad and just jack up the calories to an immense number.
Yeah. So, I wanted to just mention, this is the holiday period, and we're just finishing up Hanukkah for those who celebrate. I like to say that I'm not a religious person, but I love holidays. I love holiday foods. I love the songs. I love gathering with people. And my favorite thing about Hanukkah is making my favorite baked potato pancakes, which have a tiny bit of oil in them, but they're not fried. And
very good.
I really think we got the message wrong when it came to the Hanukkah story and the miracle of the candelabra, the menorah, the oil that was only good for one day and it lasted 8 days.
Right.
The story or the way we celebrate it is that because this oil lasted for 8 days, we now eat tons and tons of oil during the holiday in terms of fried foods.
And wait a minute, you mean I wasn't supposed to have 12 fried lakis?
No. I really think the message, and I'm genuinely sincere about this, I think the message was to learn how to conserve oil for energy and not to drown ourselves in oil in our food. Where did people get that crazy message?
Yes.
So for hundreds of years, we've just really been steered wrong, and I'm trying to turn it down, the lone voice.
Well, unfortunately, you might say oil provides a certain mouthfeel quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what sort of pulls people in. And, you know, once you've had one fried latke,
you have to get more.
Yes. You can't have just one. So you got to have one if you're going to have 10.
And then how do you feel after 10? So horrible.
Yes. You wish you hadn't.
You wish, exactly. What's the celebration there? I don't get it.
And depending on how much oil you may have in each latke, I mean, you could be looking at 100 calories a latke.
Woo!
Times
there's,
10 or 12.
Wow. Yeah, that's a lot of calories.
That's a lot of calories. It's a lot of oil. Now you're in the bathroom in pain. And now you may have that damage to your heart and cardiovascular system that the no oil authors are concerned about because you did eat a ton of oil. So I do like the idea that you're bringing forth, which is a little bit of oil in the right kind of context, cook it a little differently. You get essentially the same kind of mouthfeel without all that oil and all that grease.
It's delicious. I love these baked potato pancakes. I love them.
You just forgot to invite me over.
Well, you can go to ResponsibleEatingAndLiving.com right now, and you can watch my food show, and you can get the recipe, and you can make them. And you can share them with your friends and family.
Yes. I'll have to make a point of that. I haven't made latkes in quite a while.
Yeah, they're good. They're fun.
And
try and spread my message about how we got the story of the oil wrong.
Yes. So I think the message with oil is a little bit is okay, but you don't want to drown it. And a little bit can be healthy.
Yes. I like it because I love the taste of olive oil. And I tend not to cook with oil very often. I've gotten into sautéing in water or tea or wine or beer. I like that habit, but I do use some oil, and I'm not afraid of it when I do, and I really enjoy it when I do. I think that's important, to enjoy what you're eating.
Absolutely.
And not give yourself that guilty, oh, my God, I shouldn't be eating this message ever.
Yeah, I think that's one unfortunate aspect with our obsession with health, is that people inevitably fall down And, you know, nobody's perfect, and I certainly don't expect perfection. I'm not perfect myself, but people get this message that they should be or need to be perfect, and then they feel this inevitable sense of guilt and failure, and that's clearly not the right response anybody was looking for. And anybody who is creating this message that we need to be perfect is not, in my opinion, sending the right message.
I agree. We don't need to be perfect. Just close.
Just close.
All right.
Yes, as you said, your food should be enjoyable. If it's not enjoyable, if the only reason you're eating it is because it's healthy.
Oh, that's no good.
Yeah, that's not good. You should have, when it's your birthday, you should have a piece of cake.
I agree.
I don't recommend you eat the cake for breakfast, but, have a piece of cake. If it's New Year's, have a little champagne, or if you can, if you're medically okay.
You know, at my website, Responsible Eating and Living, we have a lot of baked goods, a lot of treat recipes, and I always like to remind people, because maybe some people who are just going to the website and aren't familiar with me and my message, a lot of these foods are not for every day. But I like to create them, and I like to put them up there because there are people that are going vegan, and especially who might have celiac disease or a wheat problem. I like to make gluten-free vegan treats because I don't want people to think that they can't be vegan or plant-based if they have a particular allergy, like to wheat or something. There's just like so many great flours and so many different ways to make lots of things, cookies and cakes and healthy foods. I put all of that up there because my first motive is about not causing pain and suffering and exploitation on this planet, and that's to animals. So it may not be obvious, but my first mission is to get people to eat less animals. So I put cakes and cookies up there. Now, my second mission is for those who are interested in being as healthy as they can, talking about how to do that. That's where I'm at.
I agree.
That's good. All right, let's talk about...
We're so much on the same page.
I love this guy. Can you tell? Everything that you're about and everything that you're promoting, I'm so glad that you're out there. And I can't believe we haven't talked in so long. Now.
Yeah, I'll have to come to New York one of these days.
Yes, and I will make you some wonderful food, because that's what we do here at Responsible Eating and Living Headquarters all day long. Make delicious food.
I'm going to have chocolate cake for breakfast.
Is that you're putting in your order now?
I'm putting in my order now. fried latkes, baked.
Yeah, not here. I mean, one of the reasons why I don't make them, other than I don't think they're healthy, is they're such a pain to make when you fry them. They make your kitchen dirty. You have to stand over them, and it's just such an unpleasant experience.
I would say that's the other side benefit of eating a healthy diet. The kitchen is a lot less dirty.
That's right.
The grease is not on all your cabinets and on your floor and on your walls.
Yes, and it's cleaner. It's easier to clean your pots and pans. It's crazy.
And there's no bugs.
Well, do you live in an apartment building?
Well, I live in a condo, but of course, a lot of bugs will eat just about anything, but one of the things that they really love is grease.
I mean, I don't want to jinx myself, but we don't really have bugs here in our apartment, but I know a lot of people who get the exterminator coming in because we do have that cockroach syndrome.
Yeah.
And we keep them out of our place. Not that they're not welcome, but... They don't really belong here.
I would say they're not welcome.
Yeah, they're not welcome. I don't want to say I don't like them. I want to, but
as long as they're outside, they're fine.
Yes. Anyway, let's talk about B12 for a minute. You know, there's lots of different blogs and websites promoting all kinds of different information. We've got the paleo scene and. There are some places that are promoting different kinds of meat and animal products to get your B12, like beef liver and eggs. What do you think about that?
Well, I wish the paleo people would read an encyclopedia about where B12 comes from sometimes.
Where does it come from?
B12 is produced by bacteria that are naturally occurring in the soil.
Oh, bacteria again, our friend.
Yeah, bacteria again. So, of course, so animal foods contain B12 because animals eat soil when they eat plants. So, and we were probably eating soil 100 and some odd years ago, and the average American probably had a garden of some sort or shared a garden of some sort, and they were probably eating soil probably most days of the week. So they were probably getting B12, even without knowing it.
Yeah. But now so, we've got a very unnatural environment that we live in.
Yeah, well, I don't recommend people...
eating dirt?
Eat dirt. It's probably not a wise idea. Unless, well, you know, I don't want to say there are some circumstances, but probably the least desire would be in an urban environment because all the pollutants that are in the atmosphere are in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So, which, you know, includes all kinds of heavy metals and PCBs and smog and all kinds of wonderful stuff. So, yeah, I don't recommend people eat soil. So,
we don't need to eat it. What about beef liver?
Yeah, we don't need to eat beef liver either, because the cow would object. But, so, there's only a few sources in the vegan world for B12. The first of which, of course, is nutritional yeast. So for people who have not heard of nutritional yeast, it is not brewer's yeast. It is not baker's yeast. It is nutritional yeast. It's a totally different yeast, totally different beast of yeast.
And it's delicious.
And it's delicious. So if you have a good quality natural food store, you should be able to find nutritional yeast. It should be labeled as containing B12. I probably would not buy it in a bulk, clear plastic bulk container.
Oh, you mean in the store in a bulk container?
Yes.
Why not?
Because UV light kills B12.
Oh, interesting.
So buy it in a closed carton or box or whatever package it comes in. And you can sprinkle it on pizza, pasta. Some people think it provides a slightly cheesy texture. It's not going to replace cheese as in a grilled cheese sandwich, but it's not bad sprinkled on top of pizza like a Parmesan or on top of pasta or over a salad or something like that. And at 2 tablespoons provides an entire day supply.
Mm. It's good.
Yes, and some people just, you know, they go nuts for nutritional yeast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm one of them. We use it a lot, all kinds of different things. It's quite good on popcorn and sauces. It partners very well with sesame tahini.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
so,
yummy.
So if you're not really too enthralled by the idea of eating nutritional yeast, there are various fortified foods out there, like fortified breakfast cereals and non-dairy milks that, of course, will supply B12. But in most cases, they're not supplying more than one day's requirement. So if you don't eat it tomorrow, you just missed out on your B12. So for consistency of dosing, I recommend a supplement, unless you are eating nutritional yeast
pretty much every
day.
How about both?
You know, yeah, you could. Absolutely.
Yeah, you can't get too much of it.
No. There's one case reported in the literature of B12 toxicity.
Mm.
One case.
Okay.
But
how did they do that?
You have to really, really try. And try very hard. You'd probably have to swallow the entire bottle of B12 tablets in one day. And do that probably for a period of, I don't know, probably several days or several weeks. And, yeah, you probably could get a B12 toxicity, but for the average person, the risk is essentially zero. So,
very good. I'm going to change the subject again. Are you familiar with the USDA Dietary Guidelines and the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee?
Yes.
So they're working on the 2015 dietary guidelines?
Yes.
And it's a very frustrating thing. Do you have any comments about it?
I can't imagine why it would be frustrating.
Well, one of the things that I find frustrating is that there are certain people in Congress, our lovely Congress, that don't want to connect the dots between our environment and the problems we're having with the environment these days with the way we're producing food.
A guilty conscience is a very powerful tool.
And I keep saying, how is it our food is not connected to the environment? Where do you get your food? From another planet? Mine grows in the soil and takes in the air, and that's the environment, isn't it?
It's so much easier just to sweep certain things under the rug, Karen.
Yeah.
Haven't you learned that? I mean,
yeah.
Come on, it's the American way. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, Congress would rather sweep the environmental impacts of our diet under a very large rug because there's very large impacts. And in fact, I'm actually co-authoring a book on this called The Restore Our Planet Diet.
I'm waiting for that book. And when can we expect to see it?
Hopefully in the next 3 to 6 months.
Well, that's good because I'm going to have you back on the program in less than 5 years if that book comes out.
I think I can arrange that.
Oh, good.
So I definitely agree with you that there's huge impacts that need to be addressed that have basically been unaddressed, and what I would call the fact that these impacts have been unaddressed, I would call welfare. So these are environmental regulations and costs that have not been borne by the industry, that have been passed down to the taxpayers, borne by the environment, and borne by people downstream. That's corporate welfare. And, you know, as I would have hoped everybody learned when they were 5 years old, you clean up your mess. If you make it, you clean it.
Please, yes, that's such a good point. Clean up your mess. Well, if people are interested in the 2015 dietary guidelines, you can go to health.gov and read all about them, and you can even make a public comment about what you think about them.
Yes, absolutely. And I was actually fortunate enough to have the opportunity to testify live at the first dietary guidelines hearing, which was in January in D.C.
Wow, what did you tell him?
Oh, it was not just me. Believe it or not, there was 15 out of 52 speakers were speaking on a plant-based diet.
Wow, that's awesome.
It was amazing.
That's more than 20%.
Essentially, every third speaker was saying plant-based, plant-based,
wow.
Plant-based. If you didn't hear it the first six times, plant-based, because we've got another eight speakers coming behind me who are going to say the same thing. It was amazing, and it was uncoordinated, completely unplanned, and we all just showed up.
Wow.
And
I love that.
So I was very optimistic coming out of the hearing because, well, they didn't get the message from that one day. Clearly, there's something that needs to be examined. But I'm hopeful that, in some sense, the dietary guidelines will improve. I suppose the one thing that I would be looking for, I guess two things I'd be looking for, and I testified to this. One would be to double the amount of vegetables from one quarter of the plate to half the plate, and shift the fruit off the plate onto another dish,
ooh,
essentially a snack idea or snack
good
concept.
Very good, very good.
So, and the other idea was to rename the dairy group the calcium group.
Yeah, that's another strange thing about the MyPlate, where we have protein and then we just have specific foods, and they're not speaking apples and oranges. It's like apples and oranges. Well,
yeah,
Mark,
so
we're out of time.
Oh, we're out of time?
We're out of time, and we were just starting to have fun, I know. So finish your book, and then you'll come back on, and we'll talk more about that. How's that?
Absolutely. I would love to.
Okay, so we have a plan. Good.
Always good to have a plan.
Yes, Mark, thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food, and we'll have to visit you more at balancednutritiononline.com.
Karen, it's been a pleasure, as always.
Yes. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Happy holidays.
Okay. You too.
And everybody eat their vegetables.
Eat your vegetables. Fruit's a treat. Very good. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, we just have like a minute or two left, and I wanted to remind you, visit responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's where I live, and it is the end of the year and a special time for a lot of us nonprofits who are hoping to receive gifts, and Responsible Eating and Living is one of them. I want to thank some of you out there who have been very generous. I really appreciate it, and anyone who is moved to do so for the end of the year. We are a 501c3. You get a tax deduction, and any help is welcome. Thank you. So that's it for this show. Thanks for joining me. Happy holidays, and have a delicious, delicious week.